Welcome to the podcast of the City Club of Eugene, Oregon. The City Club builds community vision through open inquiry and is dedicated to enabling an informed public on a wide range of topics. Coming up in today's program.
First off, there's undeniably an increase in hate crime activity. But second, there's also an increase in reporting of hate crime activity, which is significant because we also know that these are crimes that have historically been under and unreported. Third factor is law enforcement agencies are getting better about how they track and report hate crime incidents.
We appreciate the sponsors who make our civic work possible, including Kaiser Permanente, kp.org, Lane Community College, lanecc.edu, Peace Health, peacehealth.org, the University of Oregon, uoregon.edu, and generous support from Lane County and the City of Eugene. And here's today's program.
Welcome to City Club of Eugene's November 19, 2021 program, Hate Crimes, Facts, and Fixes. I'm Kitty Piercy, and I'm the City Club President. Support for the City Club is provided for our members and sponsors. You can become a member of the City Club at our website, cityclubofeugene.org. In today's program, we welcome speakers, Ryan Dwyer, Supervisor Special Agent FBI, Fabio Andrade, Civil Rights and Equity Analyst for the City of Eugene, Lindsay Schubiner, Momentum Program Director, Western State Center. Biographical information on our speakers is available on our website, cityclubofeugene.org. I'd like to thank Joe Korn for coordinating today's program. So here we are, Hate Crimes, Facts, and Fixes. Well, no one is born with hate, but it seems more and more people are learning to hate. In the last 2 months, the RG has these headlines. Eugene has spike in bias crimes and incidents. Eugene still leads state in reported hate crimes. Police arrest man suspected of stabbing Black man in West Eugene. Man sentenced to 16 years for stabbing in Eastern Oregon. Police reported 40 more hate and bias incidents in Eugene in 2020 than in 29, according to a recent report. Oregon raised the budget for its bias incident and crimes hotline from $43,000 to $2 million. This program will provide the facts and statistics about bias incidents and crimes. How are law enforcement officers and prosecutors responding? What does the City of Eugene do to assist the victims? What strategies seem to reduce the hate? Three professionals whose work focuses on these issues will share their experience and insight.
Good afternoon. I'm Joel Korn from the City Club Program Committee, and I am the coordinator of this program. You've heard about the problems and the newspaper articles dealing with incidents of racial bias, and we now have three speakers who are going to discuss the issue and hopefully maybe suggest some solutions. Our first speaker is Ryan Dwyer, supervisory agent of the supervisory special agent from the FBI. Ryan?
Thank you, Joel. I'm absolutely honored to be part of this discussion. It's truly a critical time to be discussing hate crime. As Joel mentioned, headlines are full of stark reminders that bias-motivated violence continues to be a huge problem throughout our country and here in Oregon. As Joel said, I'm Ryan Dwyer. I'm the program manager for the Civil Rights Program for the FBI's Portland Field Office, which serves all of Oregon. I'm lucky enough to be based in Eugene. The FBI's Civil Rights Program covers three types of crimes. First, hate crimes, which we're obviously here to discuss today. The second is color of law crimes, which involve public officials who use their authority or their position to abuse the rights of others. And the third type are enforcement of FACE Act violations. FACE Act is the freedom of access to clinic entrances. It's the law that's meant to guarantee rights of access to reproductive health facilities. So those are the three elements of the FBI's civil rights program. And based on the national trends and the sheer impact of these crimes, this year the FBI elevated civil rights to a national threat priority. It's our highest criminal priority. So over organized crime, corporate fraud, drug trafficking, all the other things the FBI investigates, we recognize that civil rights has a monumental impact on our communities and on our country. And this is not something within the FBI. It's a very significant development. It's the result of deep analysis and review of trends throughout our country. And for many of the reasons we're going to discuss here today, hate crimes are the number one priority within the FBI's civil rights program. So where are we as a nation, as a community with regards to hate crime? By any measure, hate crimes have increased in the past 2 years. I want to take a minute to speak specifically about one commonly used metric, and that's the FBI hate crime statistics. Where these numbers come from, what they tell us, and what they don't. As background, since the early 1990s, the FBI has tracked hate crimes through a system called the Universal Crime Reporting System. Essentially, law enforcement agencies around the country report their numbers of reported hate crimes to the FBI. The FBI then compiles that information and releases it annually for the public, for media, for academic institutions to review. For the purpose of these reports, hate crimes are defined as a criminal offense motivated in whole or in part by the offender's bias or biases against a race, religion, disability, sexual orientation, ethnicity, gender, or gender identity. So when we look at these statistics, we know nationwide, we are at the highest level of reported hate crimes that we've been in 2 decades. That's alarming in of itself. If we take it down and we look at Oregon, we know that for 2020, which is the most recent set of data available, was released in August of this year, 200 hate crime incidents were reported with 360 identified victims. That's compared to 2019, when we had 178 reported hate crime incidents with 242 victims. And in 2019, with 178 hate crimes, that was still an increase over 2018, significantly over 2017. So we were trending up and we saw a large jump going into 2020. Here in Eugene, we have 43 reported hate crime incidents in 2020, as opposed to 40 in 2019. What we know is in the state of Oregon, we saw a 57% increase in reported hate crimes between 2019 and 2020. Now, expand that out. We know that Oregon is one of over 30 states across the country that saw a double-digit percentage increase in reported hate crimes over the last year. You know, the statistics go into further detail. We know in the state of Oregon, what we know from those statistics is the most common type of bias crime involved intimidation, followed by simple assault. The incidents were more likely to occur on a roadway or a street or a public thoroughfare than anywhere else, followed by park or a public space. And if we break it down by bias, we know in the state of Oregon, approximately 70% of bias crimes were based on race, ancestry, or ethnicity, and individuals identified as Black were the most commonly targeted in those incidents. The second most common bias motivator was religious, and individuals identifying as Jewish were the most commonly targeted amongst religious-based bias crimes. Following religious-based bias crimes was sexual orientation, motivation, and gender identity. And this roughly numerically matches trends nationwide. So clearly a huge jump in reported hate crimes nationwide and in Oregon over the last year. The FBI attributes that increase here in Oregon to 3 factors. First off, there's undeniably an increase in hate crime activity. But second, there's also an increase in reporting of hate crime activity, which is significant because we also know that these are crimes that have historically been under and unreported. Third factor is law enforcement agencies are getting better about how they track and report hate crime incidents. Obviously, the second 2 factors are positive, and law enforcement and certainly the FBI want to build on that. And I'll discuss that in a minute. But first, I want to cover a few considerations to keep in mind when you review or you hear about FBI hate crime statistics, because they're frequently quoted in the media and other outlets. And there are some things there's some specific factors in the FBI hate crime statistics that sort of dictate how they should be most meaningfully viewed. First, they track hate crimes reported. They don't track hate incidents. So bias motivated incidents, which may be incredibly impactful, but may involve First Amendment protected activity, free speech, are not captured in the FBI hate crime statistics. There are a number of other studies through the media, through academia, which strive to capture that, but the FBI hate crime statistics do not capture that. Second, the information is voluntarily provided by law enforcement agencies. So in 2020, 207 out of 234 Oregon entities provided data, and the vast majority of the state's population is covered. That's relatively high when we look nationwide. So our coverage in Oregon is relatively high, but there's a difference nationwide in how different agencies track and report hate crimes. Some have very, very robust tracking methods, and as a result, their numbers of hate crimes appear higher. So for that reason, we urge people not to use FBI hate crime statistics to compare jurisdictions, compare cities, which you'll see in headlines that such and such a city is more dangerous than this city based on FBI hate crime or crime statistics or hate crime statistics. And that's really, it's really can be very misleading. Eugene, for example, has a very robust method of tracking hate crime numbers. And I think we'll hear more about that during our discussion. So what the data is meant to do is provide communities, researchers, media members, policymakers, government officials, allow them to have a more informed discussion of crime in their communities. That's what the data is primarily meant for. The data is available on our website to the public. You can go back to 1996 and track it every year. It's broken down in numerous ways. You can break it down by city, county, state, the type of crime, the bias motivator, as I summarize some of that information, the location type. This year, we launched a new tool called a Crime Data Explorer, which is much more interactive. It's less of a static system. It allows people to download the reports they're most interested in. So that's just a snippet of where we are statistics-wise, which is alarming in itself. But we know statistics are an important part of the discussion, but numbers don't fully capture the effects of hate crime in our community. The defining characteristic of hate crimes and why it is such a focus for the FBI is that they target a community. The effects are devastating and broad. And we also know that historical and societal context leads to impacts within specific populations that we can't fully understand. And we also know hate crimes, as I mentioned, are vastly underreported, and trust between some groups in our community and law enforcement is a factor in this. Recognizing this, the United States Department of Justice and the FBI launched several efforts over the last few months to increase awareness and in reporting of hate crime and improve law enforcement response to hate crimes. So we've increased here in Oregon, we've increased training for our staff in the FBI. Nationwide, we've done that as well. We've increased training opportunities with FBI agents alongside state, local, and tribal investigators and prosecutors. We've increased outreach and engagement efforts with members of our community that are most heavily affected by hate crimes and bias-motivated crime. And we've released materials and made a strong effort to publish materials in multiple languages because we don't want a language barrier to be an obstacle to reporting. We have a really robust language support system, so we will find a way to talk to the folks that we need to talk to. And we've funded messaging through traditional and social media. You'll see billboards in certain parts of Oregon encouraging reporting of hate crimes and hate incidents. In certain markets, you'll hear radio spots. And these are not things the FBI typically does. In my 19 years, I have not seen us do this. But we recognize that this is an issue that is that important to our community that we need to make sure we as an agency are as accessible and as proactive as we can be. So, and we know we're not alone in this. We know there are other law enforcement and government agencies that are taking several similar steps. Our partners at Oregon DOJ have done a really tremendous job forming a robust bias reporting hotline. And one of the FBI's goals as we move forward and continue to prioritize civil rights and hate crimes is to ensure we're coordinating with all those agencies. We're coordinating with Oregon DOJ to ensure we're identifying and pursuing cases as cooperatively as possible. So with that, I'll say if you have been a victim of a hate crime or you know someone who's been a victim of a hate crime, please let law enforcement know. Please contact local law enforcement, contact the Oregon Department of Justice, contact the FBI. 24/7, you can contact the FBI at 1-800-CALL-FBI or fbi.tips.gov.gov. And hopefully several times before this program's out, you'll hear me repeat that information because we think it's very important to get that out there. And if you want to learn more about the FBI's civil rights program here in Oregon, I encourage you to contact the FBI's Portland field office through our website at fbi.gov. You can follow us on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook. We have several different social media outlets we're tracking. So we encourage you, please reach out and contact us. Certainly, as I said, if you've been a victim of a crime, please contact law enforcement. You can always contact the FBI. We embrace opportunities to come and talk to groups if you have specific questions that you feel you'd like to address with an FBI agent. You can always, as I said, reach out to the FBI's Portland field office. With that, I'd like to hand that off to the next speaker, Fabio Andrade.
Thanks, Ryan. My name is Fabio Andrade, and I work in the Office of Human Rights and Neighborhood Involvement at the City of Eugene. I work with the Rights Assistance Program, which is a program to support the victims of hate crimes and discrimination here at the City of Eugene. Eugene has a mission of creating a safe, welcoming, and inclusive community for everyone. And that is important because we do know that despite we live in a very progressive city, we still have many community members experiencing discrimination, experiencing hate crimes. And Eugene has had over the years a strong program to track, respond to hate crimes and discrimination, and also support the victims. And this work is supported by direction that we receive from our city council and city leadership that started in 1971 with the creation of a human rights commission and the human rights code. And our code includes some protections for groups that are not or had at times were not yet protected by state and federal law. In more recent years, our city council has been passing resolutions and ordinances and providing guidance on how we can make sure that everyone who lives, works, and visits the city of Eugene is being supported. And those include oppositions to anti-Semitic hate crimes, protections for refugees and immigrants, protection for women, protections for our LGBTQ plus community, and also condemning white nationalism, which we have seen an increase in this kind of activity recently. And in the city website, if you search for human rights, you can find more information about what the city of Eugene and our city council has been doing to promote inclusivity in our community. As we heard, hate crimes is at first a crime that has also a biased motivation, that someone has an intention of harming someone else because of a characteristic of that person. It can be race, gender, national origin, religion. At the City of Eugene, we have added some additional protections. One of those additional protections, the most recent one, is based on the condition of being unhoused. At the City of Eugene, it is illegal to intimidate someone because of that person being unhoused. And this has an impact because we promote education and we help our community understand that certain activities are not supported or accepted here. And we hope that by doing this kind of work, we can support everyone having a sense of belonging in our community. We have had a system to track hate crimes and discrimination and support victims for several years. First, it started as a volunteer staff program through the Human Rights Commission, and more recently, fully operated by staff. So the system we have in place in Eugene is a partnership between the Office of Human Rights and the Eugene Police Department. So we have three stages. In the first stage, we are collecting reports of hate crimes and discrimination. And people can report directly to Eugene police if they believe they have been victimized in a criminal incident, or they can report to HRNI if they believe it's a case of discrimination, or if they do not feel confident reaching out to police as the first resource. So sometimes we do receive here in our office reports that are criminal in nature, and we work with the victims so they can feel comfortable reporting to police if that's what they wish to pursue. So in this partnership between Eugene and the Office of Human Rights, we have been tracking all hate crimes and incidents, promoting education, supporting the victims, and publishing an annual report, which can be found at the city website. We have reports for the past 9 years, and people can see how things have changed over the years here at the city of Eugene. Our office also provides the role of supporting victims. So sometimes that support is just providing information or just listening to the experience, so people feel like the city is collecting that information and using it in policy making. Sometimes it's connecting people to resources. So we have local, we have state, and some national resources we can connect people to. In many situations, people do not know what they need. And they come to us and they tell us about their experience. And then through a conversation, we can help them identify what kind of resource will be most helpful for each individual. And we also do reporting, as you heard from Ryan earlier. Eugene has been reporting hate crimes to the FBI for many years. And our reporting is quite robust when we compare to other states. And that's because the city has voluntarily provided that data. Unfortunately, sometimes we are portrayed in some reports and rankings based on that reporting at the FBI website, which is voluntary, as a city with a high incidence of hate crimes. And what we know from our experience here is that we have a high level of reporting because we have been promoting education for our community over the years. And many people are engaged in this effort. We do receive reports from individuals, but we also receive reports from community partners. So through the Human Rights Commission and several other nonprofits, religious entities, and some other groups, they have been connecting victims with our service here in the Office of Human Rights and also at Eugene Police. It's also important to mention that Eugene Police has a special investigations unit, which has detectives assigned to specific communities. And those detectives develop expertise and relationships that help us and give certain groups and leaders in our community access to provide information and collaborate with us in creating this community in which everyone can feel supported and welcome. The most important thing is that people take the first step, which is reporting hate crimes and reporting discrimination. Here in Eugene, we have several ways for people to report. If they believe a crime is happening at the moment, they can call 911. If something that happened in the past, but they need support with, they can contact our office. People can report online, going to our website, eugene-or.gov/reporthate. It's a very friendly form that people can submit. Witnesses can also submit, or organizations can submit a report on behalf of the people they are supporting. Right now, because of restrictions due to the COVID pandemic, we have limited hours, but people can still come in person to our office. We are located at 101 West 10th Avenue in the LCC downtown building. And we can see people here in person from Tuesday to Thursdays from 10 to 2 p.m. And with that, let's hear from Lindsay Schubner.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me here. My name is Lindsay Schubiner, and I am a program director at Western State Center. So I want to start off by focusing specifically on some of the victims of this type of hate violence. Last month, a man went into a mall in Boise and he was open carrying and walked around the mall for 40 minutes before he began shooting. And he killed two people, both from marginalized communities. He injured four others. He killed 26-year-old Jo Acker, a trans woman beloved by her community, who worked as a security guard at the mall and engaged with the shooter about his open carry gun, which was not allowed in the mall. And the shooter also killed Roberto Padilla Arguelles, a father and a husband who was working in Idaho, and he was reportedly at the mall to buy gifts for his family, who he planned to travel to see in Mexico soon. The shooting wasn't initially reported as hate violence in the media, and the shooter's bigoted views still aren't always mentioned in follow-up reporting, but they're certainly there. The shooter maintained a YouTube channel that aligned with views promoted by many bigoted and anti-democracy groups. The About section of his channel was openly racist, particularly toward Black and Latinx communities. He was a gun rights extremist, opposed to limits on felons such as himself owning guns, and was actively advocating for those extreme views, which are common among paramilitary and alt-right members. This was a devastating incident of violence, but it is sadly not a rarity. It's just one example. On September 19th, Barry Washington Jr., a young Black man, was murdered outside a nightclub in Bend, Oregon, for speaking to the girlfriend of his white killer. In October in Stockton, California, Bobby Gale Jr., a 45-year-old Black construction worker, was shot seven times on a job site as the assailant yelled racist slurs. And we know that transgender communities face an epidemic of violence, of hate violence, and Jo Acker's tragic death is at least the 42nd violent killing of a transgender or gender nonconforming person in 2021. We've seen a significant rise in hate violence over the past few years, and that's not divorced from what's happening in our broader politics. We have seen white nationalists and paramilitary groups be welcomed into the political mainstream by national leaders. And these are groups that foment hatred and spread bigotry. Of course, racism and bigotry have long existed in the United States, particularly rooted in our history of genocide, slavery, and structural white supremacy. The thing to understand, though, is that these dangerous social movements don't solely aim to elevate this bigotry, though they absolutely do that. They're spreading this bigotry with a goal, and that goal is to build political power based on bigotry. These groups are part of an anti-democracy social movement that relies on threats and intimidation and violence, mostly directed at Black people, Indigenous people, other people of color, religious minorities, LGBTQ people, and particularly trans people, other marginalized communities, and people as well that they see as their political opponents. And I mentioned that this movement is violent and bigoted, and it's also specifically anti-democracy. I'm not describing it as anti-democracy just because of what we saw on January 6th during the insurrection. So that was certainly an illustration of its danger, I think. But it's also because white nationalism has a vision for an all-white ethnostate within the United States, and that puts them at odds with any inclusive democratic institutions that we have. And this deep orientation against inclusive democracy is really aligned, as we would expect, with their public messaging and their tactics, right? They often use conspiracy theories to spread their message, like the anti-Semitic QAnon conspiracy theory. And many of these conspiracy theories argue that there are secret forces that control our government from behind the scenes. And so in their minds, if that's the case, why bother with civic engagement, right? In looking at the world this way, it makes sense to many of these bigoted groups to prioritize violence. And of course, the people most likely to suffer from that violence are people targeted by their bigotry. So with all of that in mind, I'd like to talk about three important approaches in our view to stopping hate violence. And first, as the other speakers have so eloquently talked about, right, in order to truly tackle hate violence, it's absolutely crucial to invest in accurate and publicly accessible data collection so that we can really gain a full understanding of the scope of the problem, right, from the local level to the state level to the federal level. And Eugene is a leader in this area, right? But it has to be supported by similar statewide and national efforts. And as the other speakers have also said, we know that hate violence is often underreported or unreported. So the data we have can often be troublingly incomplete, particularly in certain locations. And I think, you know, overall, it's one essential step toward ending hate violence, which is taking it seriously enough, you know, at a political and government level, to ensure that we really have a full picture of the problem. Secondly, schools have a really important role to play at the intersection of many things related to hate violence. You know, there are a number of reasons for this, right? A, they serve young people, and we know that white nationalists and other bigoted groups are often intentionally targeting young people for recruitment. In just one example, the editor of a prominent neo-Nazi website said publicly in 2018 that his site was mainly designed to target children ages 11 through their teenage years, right? So this is something that many schools are already dealing with among their students. B, schools themselves are democratic institutions and community centers, which is another thing that can make them targets, right? We often see white nationalist organizing targeting democratic institutions that are working to be inclusive and community centers. And so we've seen white nationalists drop racist flyers around schools, right? And this year in particular, we've also seen a widespread attack on schools' ability to teach accurately and honestly about the difficult parts of this country's history, including its legacy of genocide, slavery, and racism. And this really undermines schools' ability to both educate young people as critical thinkers with the grounding in history, and their ability to educate every single one of their students in a safe and supportive environment, including students of color. And then C, schools are also really important, not because they're seeing firsthand a lot of this type of activity, but there's also a lot that they can do about this issue, right? Schools and school districts have the ability to use existing policies to make sure that each student has a safe learning environment. They have the ability to teach young people how to critically evaluate information that they might see on the internet, right? We know how important that is. They have the ability also from educators to administrators to really clearly and repeatedly reject bigotry whenever incidents arise, and to reinforce shared school values within their school communities, such as inclusion and respect for one another. And of course, the Oregon Department of Education has specifically shown leadership in this area with the Every Student Belongs rule. These three reasons are also why Western State Center developed our Confronting White Nationalism in Schools toolkit to really provide, hopefully, some concrete ways for administrators, educators, and anyone involved in a school community to recognize when bigoted or white nationalist ideology may be influencing a student or the school community, and to respond in ways that prioritize protecting student safety and the school's ability to fulfill its core educational functions in an equitable manner. Then the third and final approach that I want to discuss today to stopping hate violence is the real importance of political leadership and the role of local governments and other democratic institutions. Something that we point to a lot, right, is that bigoted social movements that foment hate violence have to be understood also as a political problem, not solely a law enforcement problem, though often that is true as well, right? So if it's a political problem, that means that the issue has a political solution and a social and cultural solution as well. A lot of times we see organized bigotry and hate violence being delegated to law enforcement to deal with. And of course, that's an important part, right? Hate crimes absolutely need to be prosecuted, and there's an important role there for law enforcement. But we also need, I think, a much more holistic approach to addressing this, one that involves every sector of society, and particularly our elected officials. And that's important from one perspective, because we frequently see that local governments are often targets of these bigoted social movements, whether these movements are seeking to undermine the ability of local government to fulfill the basic responsibility of keeping their residents safe, which we've seen in Portland and in Eugene and in a number of smaller cities across the state, whether it's outright harassing and threatening public officials on a personal level with the goal of intimidation. It's so important for local governments to recognize this type of threat early on and protect communities in their jurisdictions that are targeted. But another, I think, less recognized part of that is that they also need to strengthen their own institutions, right? And that includes looking at what agencies in local government might see action or targeting from organized bigotry and strengthen them, right? Anticipate how may they be targeted, make plans in advance for continuing to fulfill their functions and doing so in a more inclusive and equitable way. And then another part of that is, I think, creating plans to protect local government staff and officials if they face threats of violence, right? As has happened across the country and across the region to health officials, school officials, elected officials in local government. And I think that's starting to happen, but I think needs to be much more widespread. Another part of this, of, you know, what we see as a potentially really important political solution, is simply building a mainstream coalition to condemn bigotry, to condemn white nationalism. It's so important to see community leaders, elected leaders, and other institutional leaders speaking out strongly and, what's most important, repeatedly, to denounce violence and denounce bigotry as a way of working to reset political norms in each community, right? It can't be just a one-time thing. And it should be, you know, based on shared values and coming from as many sectors of the community as possible, right? Local officials can help convene coalitions so that there's support for businesses to speak out together. There's support for arts and culture institutions to speak out together, for neighborhoods groups to speak out together. Elected officials can pass a resolution condemning white nationalism like the city of Eugene did, and then use that as a way to build that broader agreement and take further action. It was so powerful when we saw so many people and so many institutions denouncing racism and speaking out in support of Black lives during the summer of 2020. And I think that's really needed on an ongoing basis. And we've seen this type of thing work, right? In 2019, when the city of Portland rallied with elected officials and community leaders and law enforcement leaders to denounce bigotry and white nationalism and political violence before a planned alt-right and white nationalist rally in the city, those bigoted movements and actors took note, right? What was expected to be a large and lengthy and dangerous event ended up having weak turnout and largely wrapped up in under an hour. There's more to that story, of course, but I think that speaking out in a unified voice was really important. And of course, anti-democracy social movements like white nationalism really feed off of existing bigotry and structural inequities in society. So it's critical to tackle both at once, even though they require different strategies and distinct tools. So it's so important for elected officials to really commit to pursuing racial equity and other types of equity so that they're strengthening their own inclusive democracy institutions. Finally, in closing, I just want to say that, you know, it can sometimes feel like this can be a really hopeless issue because it's gone on for so long and the impacts are so heavy and significant. But I think there's a lot that can be done, right? We are in a dangerous moment as a country, to be sure. And there's no easy answer. but similar bigoted groups promoting organized bigotry and violence have been dismantled before. And communities in this region, many of them remember how that was done. There are also things that each and every one of us can do today, tomorrow, the next day, right? We can each say something and speak up if someone we know is spreading bigotry. We can ask any organization that we're a part of to speak out and condemn bigotry and political violence, whether it's a neighborhood group or an employer or another group that we're a part of. We can call on our elected officials to ensure better data collection on hate violence and ask them to provide concrete support to local democratic institutions facing threats from white nationalism, whether they're cities, counties, schools, libraries, museums, or others. Organized bigotry is a really big threat right now to our communities and to our very democracy. So every sector of society and everyone has a stake and a role to play in countering it.
If you enjoyed this presentation by the City Club of Eugene, please visit our website at cityclubofeugene.org or our YouTube channel and our social media pages.